America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm going to need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like,
whatever, dude.
Hey! Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand. You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
Good weekend to you and welcome to Wiggins America. My sincerest apologies for not being here last week in what was, I believe, one of the biggest weeks of news in, well, I'll say in my lifetime. They're just all smashed together. Like within the last few years, or you could say last 10 years, you've had some of the biggest news items and news cycles, news weeks of ever. And I would say that was maybe one of them. It wasn't that there were multiple stories, but that's such a huge thing with Charlie Kirk that we are going to talk about it a little bit. I get that we're moving past it here now a week and a half later. There's some things that I do want to share here. So I had a scheduled vacation. That's why I was off from Thursday through last Sunday. And I felt terrible people tuning in and hearing just a best of last week. But here we are. And on Tuesday, the Utah County DA did a press conference. He's not good at it, and I kind of appreciate that. I don't always need to have everybody be super media savvy to do their job well. In this case, he just came out and gave a lot of facts. He talked for, I think, well over a half an hour about Tyler Robinson, the shooter, the assassin of Charlie Kirk. Alleged, I'll say, because we have to say that, but my goodness, the mountain of evidence. I mean, he's admitted to it, so I'm not sure why we have to keep saying that other than just for legal reasons. But that's where we are. And I wanted to play some of what that DA shared because it may have gone under the radar how much they have on this guy. I mean, we could see max penalty, death penalty here in a very swift manner for Charlie Kirk's assassin, as it should be. I mean, that is what should happen. But here's why it's going to happen so fast. This is the DA kind of setting up the case here on Tuesday.
In one conversation before the shooting, Robinson mentioned that Charlie Kirk would be holding an event at UVU, which Robinson said was a stupid venue for the event. Robinson accused Kirk of spreading hate. Robinson's father reported that when his wife showed him the surveillance image of the suspected shooter in the news, he agreed that it looked like their son. He also believed that the rifle that police suspected the shooter used matched a rifle that was given to his son as a gift. As a result, Robinson's father contacted his son and asked him to send a photo of the rifle. Robinson did not respond. However, Robinson's father spoke on the phone with Robinson. Robinson implied that he planned to take his own life. Robinson's parents were able to convince him to meet at their home. As they discussed the situation, Robinson implied that he was the shooter and stated that he couldn't go to jail and just wanted to end it. When asked why he did it, Robinson explained there is too much evil and the guy, referring to Charlie Kirk, spreads too much hate.
All right. So he kills Charlie Kirk in his own words because he's full of too much evil and spreads too much hate. Now, keep in mind, this isn't a war. In World War II, we celebrated killing Hitler. This is not a war, except in the minds of some people. Now, you could say it's an ideological war, but when it turns into real war with bullets, that's when we have to turn the temperature down. And yes, there's the whole, well, both sides do it thing. I'm not getting into that. This guy's nuts. And nutty people will assume that it is their, I guess, fate, their God-given, Satan-given authority to remove people from the earth through murder. That's what he decided. He decided that his ideas were better than Charlie Kirk's, and Charlie Kirk's were so bad that he had to kill him. That is evil. And here's what's crazy about the case itself. They already have, and here, like, it drives me crazy that also people were going, ah, this FBI, they're not serious. Do you realize how fast they got this stuff? And people go, well, it's because his dad turned him in. Yeah, his dad turned him in based on video footage that they confiscated or got from the university and elsewhere, and then put out to the public and said, give us tips. That's exactly what they should do. And it worked. I get so tired of the back and forth. People go, ah, this Kash Patel is not serious. They just take pot shots. They don't even know what they're talking about. And then they get him that quick, and the whole conversation goes away. And you can find those tweets, but they mean nothing now. Anyway, side story. But this guy, this Tyler Robinson guy, they have his full text exchange with his transgender, they kept saying roommate, it was his boyfriend, although nobody could figure out, they kept saying roommate, because they couldn't figure out whether to call Tyler's boyfriend a boyfriend or a girlfriend, because he was in the midst of transitioning from male to female. So the media is like, I don't even know what to do. Let's call him roommate. But it was his lover. I mean, that word is old and weird. But he keeps referring to the boyfriend as my love. So there's no doubt about that now. But I wanted to play for you the full text exchange. Listen to it as read by the DA.
The roommate. Police interviewed Robinson's roommate, a biological male who was involved in a romantic relationship with Robinson. The roommate told police that the roommate received messages from Robinson about the shooting, and he did provide those messages to police. On September 10th, 2025, the roommate received a text message from Robinson which said, "Drop what you're doing. Look under my keyboard." The roommate looked under the keyboard and found a note that stated, quote, "I had the opportunity to take out Charlie Kirk, and I'm going to take it." Police found a photograph of this note. The following text exchange then took place. After reading the note, the roommate responded, "What? You're joking, right? Robinson, I am still okay, my love, but am stuck in Orem for a little while longer yet. Shouldn't be long until I can come home, but I gotta grab my rifle still. To be honest, I had hoped to keep this secret till I died of old age. I am sorry to involve you." Roommate, "You weren't the one who did it, right?" Robinson, I am, I'm sorry. Roommate, "I thought they caught the person." Robinson, "No, they grabbed some crazy old dude, then interrogated someone in similar clothing. I had planned to grab my rifle from my drop point shortly after, but most of that side of town got locked down. It's quiet, almost enough to get out, but there's one vehicle lingering." Roommate, "Why?" Robinson, "Why did I do it?" Roommate, "Yeah." Robinson, "I had enough of his hatred. Some hate can't be negotiated out. If I am able to grab my rifle unseen, I will have left no evidence. Going to attempt to retrieve it again. Hopefully they have moved on. I haven't seen anything about them finding it." Roommate, "How long have you been planning this?" Robinson, "A bit over a week, I believe. I can get close to it, but there is a squad car parked right by it. I think they already swept that spot, but I don't want to chance it." Robinson again, "I'm wishing I had circled back and grabbed it as soon as I got to my vehicle. I'm worried what my old man would do if I didn't bring back Grandpa's rifle. IDEK if it's had a serial number, but it wouldn't trace to me. I worry about prints. I had to leave it in a bush where I changed outfits. Didn't have the ability or time to bring it with. I might have to abandon it and hope they don't find prints. How the F will I explain losing it to my old man?" Only thing I left was the rifle wrapped in a towel. Remember how I was engraving bullets? The effing messages are mostly a big meme. If I see notice bulge UWU on Fox News, I might have a stroke, all right. I'm going to have to leave it. That really effing sucks. Judging from today, I'd say Grandpa's gun does just fine, IDK. I think that was a $2K scope. Wink, wink. Robinson again, delete this exchange. Again, Robinson, my dad wants photos of the rifle. He says Grandpa wants to know who has what. The feds released a photo of the rifle, and it is very unique. He's calling me, RN, not answering. Robinson, since Trump got into office, my dad has been pretty diehard MAGA. Robinson, I'm going to turn myself in willingly. One of my neighbors here is a deputy for the sheriff. Again, you are all I worry about, love. That came from Robinson. Roommate, I'm much more worried about you. Robinson, don't talk to the media, please. Don't take any interviews or make any comments. If any police ask you questions, ask for a lawyer and stay silent.
This is an open and shut case. There should be no question about it. He will most likely face the death penalty in Utah. And even if somehow they find something to wiggle out of in Utah, there are federal charges that he would also have to get out of, which also will include the death penalty. There is, in my opinion, no chance that this guy comes out of this alive. And that is the proper punishment for the assassin. How fast it will go, that we don't know. Hopefully swiftly. Take a short break and be back. You know, I really need to be a little clear about why I'm playing the text message exchange between Tyler Robinson and his boyfriend. It's because there's so much evidence against him that I think it's important to hear it. Now, there are a lot of people that when they hear that or read that text message exchange, they say, this sounds fake. And the thing is, it kind of does sound very flowery language. They're using like references to mythology in it. And there are conspiracies that say that Tyler and the boyfriend conspired to create that text exchange because Tyler knew he was going down and they were trying to protect the boyfriend. I don't really believe that that's true. That's the only conspiracy that I can muster that could be true, though, because the rest of them are that Tyler Robinson and this trans guy that he was dating were so deeply involved in the alt-right and this stuff with Groiper and Discord, and I'm just throwing out terms at this point, but basically they were involved in these far right meme groups. And people will say, well, it's because he said these things on the bullet casings that means this, that means this, and it's associated with Nick Fuentes, and he's so far right that he's almost back around, you know? That's the claim. And it's something that was floated immediately after the Charlie Kirk assassination and still has some legs, although a lot of people who believed in it are having to backtrack. Jameel Hill is a former journalist, probably still calls herself a journalist, who was out there saying that, and now she's had to retract. But that's what caught Jimmy Kimmel. So, you know, let me tie these stories together here. Jimmy Kimmel was believing in that alt-right stuff that was floated that has been completely debunked at this point because of all the evidence that we've heard and some of it which I just played. See, I'm trying to tie the box here, tie the knot. So that's what Jimmy Kimmel had been looking at, was this super, super leftist stuff that was trying to paint the assassin as crazy right, like so far right that Charlie Kirk wasn't far right enough for him. That's the claim. And so that's what caught Jimmy Kimmel. And he said this.
We hit some new lows over the weekend with the MAGA gang desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them and doing everything they can to score political points from it.
And that is the phrase right there, the couple sentences that got him ultimately fired and his show canceled immediately. And the way that that happened was, it was so egregious to go on national TV and say that ridiculous thing that is, again, been debunked. It is not true. Trust me when I say that I have looked into it, and many people who had believed it have also retracted their statements on it. Jimmy Kimmel decided not to do that. He made that joke. And then Nexstar, which owns a bunch of affiliates of ABC, said, forget it. I'm done with it. He said a couple other things, but that was the main thing that he said that got him canceled by a group of affiliates. Then that same day, and I'm not sure which came first, because I think this was on Wednesday. Then the Trump administration also said, hey, we're going to be looking here at some lawsuits because what he said is patently false, which is called slander. That now it's become a free speech issue, and people are claiming that he was fired and this is taking away his First Amendment rights. Now, when people claim that, they don't really get what the First Amendment is, and it shows. Because the same group was saying the same thing about Stephen Colbert. Now, the Trump administration didn't say anything really about Colbert other than that they don't like him. But they weren't threatening to take away his license or anything like that. I don't necessarily love that they're doing that. But Stephen Colbert was kind of the canary in the coal mine because his show is very expensive. And CBS, obviously, they don't want to stifle his speech. If they did, they would just cancel him immediately like ABC and Disney did with Kimmel. Disney, clearly not a right-wing group, but CBS is moving in that direction with new ownership and Paramount. So people said, oh, this is censorship. And it could be censorship, but I'm not sure why you would censor somebody and then leave them on for another year to speak badly about you or the Trump administration or whatever it is you're trying to censor. So that argument makes no sense. His show was just very expensive and it was losing money. So they said, okay, we'll give you your farewell tour. He just won the Emmy and all that stuff. Okay. But that's not a First Amendment issue. Even if you want to say it's censorship, it's not First Amendment censorship because you have to have the government involved for it to be an issue of the Constitution. That's where we get to Kimmel. Kimmel is also not being censored by the government, although there was a statement put out that maybe they could, that could have been a straw on the camel's back. And that's where I say, I don't know, I love that. But it wasn't the thing. It was this Nexstar affiliate thing that canceled him, and then the dominoes started to fall, and then maybe ABC Disney said, oh my gosh, we just lost a whole bunch of money because the Trump administration sued and won against George Stephanopoulos for slander. Again, they won that case because George Stephanopoulos did slander the Trump administration by calling him a rapist, which is factually incorrect according to courts. All right? You following me here? So all of this talk about censorship is fine, but it's not the First Amendment. This has nothing to do with constitutionality. You can get mad at them. You can get mad at the free market for deciding this. But it's not really the government. The way that we've seen the government censor people, which is illegal and is a constitutional violation, was very direct when the Biden administration, through covert operations and through the FBI and DOJ, was using back channels to censor conservatives via all social media platforms, primarily Facebook and Twitter, that we know of, because they've come out after the fact and said, yes, this was happening. It was probably happening with all of them, including YouTube, but we don't know because they haven't made all that public. But that is a direct violation of the First Amendment. And that was done by the Biden administration. What the Trump administration has done is that they have sued for slander. And a lot of that was actually done before it was the Trump administration. It was the Trump campaign doing it. He just became president. Now, I don't like when those waters get a little bit murky. But they are different cases, and I thought it was worthy of bringing up. By the way, if you're that worried about Jimmy Kimmel and him being censored and this brave voice against the powers that be, so I don't know, you'd have to do a lot of framework to do that, to come up with that. But if you were worried that, this poor guy just was censored, here's the way he covered it when Fox fired Tucker.
Has severed bow ties with Tucker Carlson. After all these years, they are parting ways, which means he was fired. I mean, that's really what parting ways means. Tucker couldn't be reached for comment. He's already on a plane to Moscow to meet with his manager. But what a shock. I mean, what an absolutely delightful shock this is. Now Tucker can spend more time at home tanning his testicles and touching himself to that sexy green M&M. Sadly, he's probably not done poisoning old people's brains. The question now is, where will he do it next? Will he go to OAN? Will he go to Newsmax? Will he crawl back up Satan's fiery beehole from whence he came? We don't know. One of the most despicable Mother Tuckers ever to appear on American television.
He didn't seem to have a whole lot of compassion, did he? But now I think he is wanting compassion, although reports that I've seen suggest that he is absolutely furious that he has lost his platform. I'm not sure what a guy like him does next. Tucker has clearly had a career after Fox. A strange one, but he has a career. I don't know what Jimmy Kimmel does. The podcast world is not as kind to the left because there just isn't much of a demand for it. Have you noticed that? It's one of the reasons these guys are getting fired, because there's not as much of a demand for their product. Let's take a short break and be right back. We'll take a little break from all the heavy stuff. A week late and a buck short here on everything concerning the assassination of Charlie Kirk. Again, my apologies. I mentioned this at the beginning of the last segment, beginning of the show. But I was out of town starting on last Thursday, so the day after the assassination happened last Wednesday, and we were live when that was going on. Annie was talking to Representative Mike Bost when we heard that news. Of course, it was a weird moment because you didn't know. We just heard he had been shot. But we also, you know, when you heard that Trump was shot, what did you assume? Well, I assumed that he had been at least injured, if not mortally so. But then we all found out, oh, no, he wasn't. He actually, it just grazed his ear. Praise God. Thank you. But this time you had to kind of hold on and go, well, what was it? What happened? And so we were in that holding pattern for most of last Wednesday when that news was coming around, and just going, oh, gosh, I don't know what this is going to be. We were, you know, I think actively praying that it wouldn't be what it was, and then it was. We didn't know that at the time. So it wasn't until I was off air that I had heard that he, you know, the official news he had passed. And I don't know that he ever had a chance. I mean, if you watch the footage, and I know that's a big, big subject of debate, do you watch it or not? Well, it was happening at the moment, and we were looking for everything we could find. So naturally, I did watch it, and I said to the room off air, I said, there's no way he survived that. There's no way. But we had to wait to know. Anyway, I was gone Thursday through Sunday, and so I was consuming the news just like you do, not as a broadcaster, and was trying to have fun. It's a guy's trip that we have every year, but man, it was like really heavy. I mean, not that we didn't have fun. It was just like, dang, like this was a big deal, and it was hanging over it at least for the first couple of days, and then you kind of settle in. But me and some dudes drove up to Milwaukee, of all places. I don't know that I had ever been to Milwaukee in my life. I'm trying to think if we even drove through it at some point. I don't think I have. I think I've been to Madison, Wisconsin once, and that was a quick little drive through. And all I remember seeing is a sign for the Onion, because that's where the Onion was at the time. I think it still is, although it's gone through some tough financial, I might have been bankrupt. But anyway, first time in Milwaukee, and the reason that we chose Milwaukee is that three of the four of us could drive there, two of us being here, one in Minneapolis, the other one in Atlanta had to fly. So we like to find a place where not everybody has to fly, although sometimes we do anyway, and we do this once a year. We went this time because the Cardinals were playing the Brewers in Milwaukee, and it's fun to see a new stadium. And so whenever we do that, I usually get a new hat. And I did this year, but it's weird because I have a Brewers hat now, and they're a Central Division foe, as opposed to other ballparks that we've been to. That game was terrible. It was last Friday night, so a little over a week ago now. And I can't believe how badly – I've never seen the Cardinals play that bad. I mean, we're talking errors. We're talking just, like, mindless stuff. And I don't want to rain on the already soggy parade, but gee whiz. I mean, it was terrible. So I'm really hoping that the new GM comes in and really makes a statement and gives us some hope. Now, gives us something to look forward to, because we've got to have that. The historic lows of Cardinals crowds, man, I mean, that's been terrible. In my lifetime and in this ballpark's lifetime, I have never seen it like this before. So hopefully it's not a sign of things to come. It's just a dip, and you go, okay, well, you had your down moment, and now we'll climb back out. You always got to hit bottom before you go back up. It's just that this is a new bottom. That's tough.
Wow, Wiggins America.
All right, weird thing here. So we are taking a little bit of a break from the heaviness of the news cycle, because I found a strange story and a whole bunch of other ones that go along with it. I'll explain here. Apparently, John Malkovich made a movie in 2015 that will be impossible to watch in your lifetime and mine. It was made in 2015, and it's supposed to, I don't know if it was like part of a marketing campaign for Louis VIII Cognac. Remy Martin, back then, hired Robert Rodriguez, very famous director, to direct a series of commercials and short films. John Malkovich was then brought in to star and also serve as creative lead on one of these projects. The focal point of the campaign is 100 Years, a short film that, according to Remy Martin, will not be made available until 2115, 100 years after its production. So this was made 10 years ago already. We're 10 years in, so 90 years from now. It's meant to mirror the amount of time it takes to produce a batch of Louis VIII cognac. I mean, that's good marketing. Clever, indeed. That means that neither Malkovich, Rodriguez, nor most people alive today will be around to see this movie. The two big names make a decent amount of sense for such an idea, with Malkovich being known for more experimental projects like Being John Malkovich, although he didn't even come up with that, but he was in it, and then Rodriguez being famous for his eclectic filmography. The commercials teasing the film, on the other hand, are widely available to watch, so you can see these for yourself if you're interested. They depict different possible versions of the future as we would have thought about it in 2015. So this is all like pre-Trump. You know, things have changed. From glowing neon cityscapes to cyberpunk dystopias and overgrown abandoned landscapes. More discouraging than hopeful, it would seem. But hey, at least there's going to be cognac, says this article from Slash Film. I find this fascinating. I really wish that they would actually go all in and not just do a short film, but make a full movie that is intended to predict what would be going on in 100 years. And maybe they play with it. Like, it's a lot of it's now, but a lot of it's done with some time travel or something, some jumping of ideas and back and forth, maybe it's a machine or whatever it is, that they jump back and forth between now and 100 years from now, so that we can see. Because if you didn't watch it for 100 years and you're watching it in 2115, you would be watching it with the 2115 stuff being the now version, and then the present would be old. So it would be fun. I wish they would do a full film like that. Maybe I'll do it. Maybe I will be the one. Here's all I need. We'll end the segment on this. We'll get back to some new stuff. All I need is for you, and if you don't have it yourself, gather your family and friends, to get together about $4 or $5 million and then give it to me. Now, if you're familiar with the film industry, $4 or $5 million, that's almost nothing. I'm giving you a huge bargain. So for my time, I'm actually just, this is a passion project for me. See, I don't care about the money. I'm doing this super low budget for a Hollywood film because I want to see it made, and I'm doing that for you.
Everybody, do me a favor. Please be respectful, okay?
Hello. So I have a few leading questions before my main one, because I have to be honest, I don't really know that much about you. So would you say that you're very religious?
I am religious. However, every one of my political positions is defensible from a non-religious perspective.
Okay, great. So I was under the impression that your beliefs on abortion were stemming from your religious beliefs.
Well, at the core, that is correct, but I can get that it is defensible from using reason and prudence, as I have done the last couple
of quarters. Cool. So you're not trying to illegalize abortion based on the Bible?
Well, no, not based on the Bible. My personal conviction comes from the Bible. I want to make abortion illegal because it is the only applicable extension of laws we already and standards we already have in the West. Correct.
I'm sorry. Can you maybe rephrase that?
Eliminating abortion is the only logical step while we apply the standard we already have in this country to unborn life. So we have murder laws.
Yes.
Therefore, murder laws should apply to unborn life as it does to born life.
Okay. So, again, reiterating, you're not trying to instate laws based on Christian beliefs because that would be unconstitutional, right?
Well, not again, sort of, but no, I am not using scripture to defend my beliefs. However, my personal convictions start with scripture, but the political views that we're talking about here are all defensible using reason and Western tradition.
Okay. So, great. That's all I needed to know, that you weren't trying to instate laws based on Christian beliefs, because I would not be able to support anything that was so blatantly unconstitutional. But thank you for clarifying that for me. I had a whole thing ready, but I guess that wasn't necessary. Thank you so much.
Well, first of all, just tell me more about how you view politics or what. Is that okay? Or if not, like... And feel free to walk away. I'm
maybe
not here.
Maybe not in this crowd.
That's okay. Thank you. What's your name?
My name is Archer.
Archer, thank you for coming up, and I hope you
thank
have a great
you so
day.
Thank so much. Thank you yeah. for clarifying.
And let me just say one last thing. I could tell you probably have a negative impression of Christianity, maybe. I hope one day we can earn back your support to making Jesus Christ your Lord and Savior. I'm sorry if the church has failed you in that way, because I do have strong religious convictions and beliefs, and there is a God who made you and loves you, and he sent his son to die for you.
Her name is Mom.
Okay, well... Thank you. I do appreciate
you.
The candor and the courage to come up here, but
so
we will pray for you. Thank you.
Okay.
So first of all, that's a very, very respectful conversation with the right priorities. And you can say that we would cherry pick conversations that he would have to make him look better than not, but that's actually just a very average conversation that he would have when he was at a college campus. She is very, I know you can't see her. She's dyed her hair all kinds of crazy colors. She got like some piercings and stuff. She is overweight. She's tried to make herself as unappealing as possible. And I find that to be the case with a lot of people who are very far left. And the whole point of them being very far left isn't political. It's that they've been harmed in some way by somebody in their life. And that may have been somebody within a church. That may have been a family member. It may have been something that's either sexual abuse or non. But they've been harmed in some way or not cared for at all in a lot of cases, like neglected. So they have chosen to make their outward appearance be that of unlovable. Because they want to show everybody, this is the way I feel on the inside, unlovable. Like, you can't reach me. And that conversation, to me, is key because it's not really political. And that's not the point. There's so many people in that situation, especially younger people, but of all ages, who they are just carrying around, for lack of a better, like using buzzwords, carrying around trauma and not dealing with it and blaming God. And I think Charlie Kirk got really to the point when he would talk to people. And that, again, is not a cherry-picked conversation. It's just an average one. Those didn't get a lot of attention. And that's why I chose that one, because it's not bombastic. That's actually the majority of the way those things would go on college campuses. To me, that's Charlie Kirk. And that's how I want to remember him. His clips will be forever analyze now. He's a martyr. And I think I've said this before, maybe even in the show. I was surprised at how emotional I was about finding out when he was assassinated. I don't know if it's because it was an assassination or because it was him, but I know a lot of people felt that way when you found out that this guy, who you really respected, I did, respected in a lot of ways. And I'd never met him. People have asked if we had ever had him on the show. I don't know. I know that I've never talked to him, but Annie may have, because I think he was a speaker at an event that we did quite a while back, but I don't know that we ever actually had him on the show. So my point is, my relationship to Charlie Kirk, there was no professional relationship. It was just like you. If you watched his clips, you thought, man, this guy is like on fire. He's so good at debating. And he was. And so his clips will live on for a long time. He's had a couple of different memorial services and a lot of famous people, a lot of obviously politically minded people have spoken at those memorial services. But I thought that none were better than, actually, RFK was really good, but none were better than Tulsi Gabbard. I'm continually surprised at how good she is at this job. And I'm going to say, I think that there is a huge future for her. We've got to get back to preaching both salt and light as Christians. Charlie Kirk was great at that. Here is Tulsi Gabbard.
And hate right now, some of them protesting outside this hall today. Unfortunately, they do not have the spiritual happiness that Charlie experienced. They're empty. And this is where their anger is coming from. It is their rejection of God, their desire to be God, and therefore they have made God their enemy. I have hope today that every one of us will do our best to shine the light of God's love in our lives and in our work, that we will treat each other with aloha, respect, and stand strong and unshakable in the defense of our God-given rights and freedoms. May God bless you all, and may God bless this great nation. Aloha.
I hope that that's what we're going to remember and really glean. That's what I'm just speaking personally. I'm trying to remember that the whole point is not politics. I think I've done a decent job of that, but it's a good reminder to me in reflecting on the way Charlie Kirk went about his life and ministry, I would say, that that's the point. And you can't really beat people over the head with political points to change their mind, although sometimes people can see enough facts that they go, actually, you know, I am drifting this way or that way. But it's the heart of the matter that needs to be addressed, and he was so good at that. Well, this has been Wiggins America. Thank you for tuning in.